Welcome to the Daytime Confidential podcast, brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. Halloween is almost upon us, so today we're counting down our top five scariest sons of bitches on soaps. We hope you enjoy, so stay tuned. Jamie, welcome.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good, it looks like. We might be in for some fun today. It's been a while since we did a top five episode, but with the holiday season upon us, we tend to do a few more during that period. Jillian, welcome.
What's up?
And Melody, welcome.
Hey, hey.
Jillian, why don't you kick us off? Top five, who is your number five scariest son of a bitch in soaps? And since we're equal opportunity, it can be male or female.
My number five is Janet from another planet, Janet Green. Anybody who could throw her sister in a well and just go after her man the way she did and put Uncle Porkchop in the freezer is a crazy. And she loved Uncle Porkchop, so you know she is a crazy son of a bitch, or daughter of a bitch, I guess.
Daughter of a bastard.
She's a crazy one. Anybody who could do all that. I mean, hell, she kidnapped poor Haley, and you know that was Uncle Porkchop's girl, and she, oh my God, I remember when she tried to smother Laurel, although I wasn't mad at her with that, because Laurel got on my nerves. I was right there cheering Janet on when she tried to smother that hoe. So, that's my number five there. Janet from another planet, from all my children.
Okay, Mel?
My number five is Mr. Mitch Lawrence from One Life to Live. I didn't start watching One Life until later, so just seeing this man come on and want to have sex with his presumed daughter, because that was still his daughter at the time the story was going on, to bear a child for him to be the savior was a bit much for me. I was like, what? Why? Why would you do that? That was over my limit. I was scared of it. And then I've seen some of the stuff back on YouTube of what he used to do to Vicky and his stuff with Allison Perkins. I was like, oh, that's enough for me. That's enough. So number five, Mitch Lawrence.
Don't you bring him on General Hospital, Ron.
Uh-uh. Don't you do it.
No.
Don't you know no good. No.
Jamie?
My number five is Kirk Cranston from Santa Barbara.
Here we go.
This was a man who C.C. Capwell wanted his daughter Eden with, as opposed to spicy hot Latino cop Cruz, you know, because Kirk was more respectable and blah, 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 you know, classic story. But Kirk went a little cray cray when Eden ended up choosing Cruz. And it basically culminated with him stalking them at a water park, and he tried to kill them in a shark tank. So I just remember back being a kid and being terrified of Kirk Cranston. And it was played by Robert Newman, who I would later come to know as heroic. Well, he was one of the Kirk Cranstons. There was another one. But the one who I believe chased Eden in the water park was Robert Newman.
Yeah, and, you know,
so, I mean, I used to have nightmares about Kirk Cranston. I was so scared of him. So, yeah.
One of the things that I sort of realized while I was compiling my list is that people who have actually scared me don't necessarily fall on the same list as my like top five soap villains. It was sort of weird because I was looking at it, it's like, okay, Helena should be here, Stefano should be here. I mean, I start going down the list of the various people, and it's like, but I don't really consider them scary. They're just fun villains. And so it was like, okay, this list didn't quite end up how I anticipated it to. So coming in at number five for me is Stavros Cassadine, who really is a son of a bitch.
Are you serious?
When he came back with Robert Kelker Kelly in the role, I was fairly new. I had been watching General Hospital for a while, but I'd never seen Stavros before. And that whole storyline, I don't know what it was about that storyline, but it scared the crap out of me in his portrayal of it. And so it was like, God, it was sort of lame, but I remember thinking back at the time, and it was like, he scared me at that point. I don't know. It was just really weird. Mel, who do you have at number four?
Oh, Luke. Stavros scared you?
No. He did at the time. I was new to the. Hey, I was fairly new to the show. Other than Helena and Stefan, I didn't know a whole lot. I mean, other than Helena, Stefan, and Nicholas, I didn't know a whole lot about the Cassadine family. So when Stavros came back after having been frozen and did all of his mustache twirling, he did scare me a little bit.
Tavis scared me because I'm like, this is what's rolling around in your mind, girl. You don't need to even write a post-it.
Mel, who do you have at number four?
At my number four, I'm taking it back on y'all a little bit. I have David Kimble from The Young and the Restless. This one was a little bit before my time, but luckily my mom had some old VHS tapes I watched one summer at YouTube, so I caught up on this one. I remember watching one episode where he threatened to cut Cricket in the face if she said something about his murdering his ex-wife and everything. But to the bulk of the story is David Kimble was with Nina for a while, but he was one big liar. He killed his ex-wife. He was trying to take all of Nina's money from that she inherited from the Chancellor fortune. He was no good for her. Cricket kept trying to tell her he was no good. Danny tried to tell her he was no good. They didn't want to listen. Well, come to find out, they were all right. David Kimble was a killer, and it ended up with Nina shooting him 6-7 times, and he was still alive. And I still have just flashbacks of him having killer written across his head by that plastic surgeon. Ugh,
Blame Jill Abbott for all of that. Jill Abbott wanted that man to get the Chancellor inheritance back from Nina and brought that crazy sucker in her life.
Oh my God, I cheered when he threatened Cricket. I was like, oh, that's my boy. Damn it, he was.
Didn't he used to be Jill's secretary? I think he was Jill's male secretary. Then mm-hmm. She was like, I need you to go ahead and mess up Nina.
Jillian?
My number four is Cesar Faison from General Hospital. Look, anyone who's been obsessed with you since you were a child, that's crazy. You are a scary son of a bitch right there. All of the reason why Anna and Robert busted up is all because of him, because Anna was a double agent and he decided to snitch so he can bust up that marriage. He was just crazy as a mother. I mean, he brainwashed Robert into thinking that he nailed Anna when he didn't. He befriended Robin so he could get closer to Anna. He was just beyond insane. Didn't really like when he came back and was obsessed with Felicia because everyone knew it was Anna was his woman. That was his gal that he wanted to get. But Cesar, shoot, if I was to run into that cat, if he was like, I want to take you on a date, I'd be like, you know, I'm gay and I got 2 weeks to live, so no thank you.
That is an excellent pick. I had not thought of him, but I'll never forget how he was his involvement in Lucky's exit storyline when it was believed Lucky was dead. That was so good. Jamie.
My number four is a daughter of a bitch. And look, I don't know if Mama Evans in Colorado is really a bitch, but my number four scariest soap son of a bitch is Dr. Marlena Evans. Because in not one, but two storylines, Marlena terrified me when she had a devil in her. And she was painting, you know, religious symbols on Nick and Kristen and talking like, and look, and telling Grandma Brady what a whole slut bag she was. She terrified me something serious. My uncle, I've told this story on this podcast before, but my uncle, who is the most hetero macho dude in the world, named his pit bull Marlena. because of that storyline. This pit bull that he used to like to fight. Don't tell anybody. But he named her Marlena because he thought Marlena was the baddest bitch in soaps at that time. And she was, you know, during that demon possession story. And then, years later, Marlena again terrified me when she was killing up everybody in Salem. Now, of course, they undid that story. But as it was going on, Marlena was scary as hell. When she killed Tony, when she, you know, oh, God, I just hate that they brought him all back to life. Because that story was pimp up until that point. When she, the reveal was just epic. Tony is lying in that bed. She had already had him attacked by a tiger. You know, and that was during the whole Siegfried and Roy thing. James Riley was a little off. He did some crazy stuff. But he'd already been attacked by that tiger. But when Marlena came in there, you know, under the guise of being the concerned doctor, and was like, bitch, I'm finna finish you off. It's me. And then when she killed Grant with that donut... I think she killed Maggie with a bottle of alcohol. I mean,
oh yeah, it was low.
Yes, Marlena scared the devil out of me, literally.
Well, coming in at number four for me is someone who left an indelible impression, because whenever I now see her in television shows or in film, I always go, "There's Julia, the woman who raped Jack on As the World Turns." Julia Lindsay. I was quite new to As the World Turns when she was rampaging through Oakdale. And I will never forget the storyline where she went after Jack and almost killed Carly. And then she rapes Jack. And it was like the repercussions from that storyline lasted forever. But she, the actress, I'm not sure how the last name is pronounced. I apologize. Annie Parisi was fantastic as playing Nut Job, and she scared the crap out of me on the show. And every time I still see her in anything, it's like, there's the chick who raped Jack. And it's stupid stuff, because I think she was in that film, 10 Ways to Lose a Guy with Kate Hudson, or How to Lose a Guy
in 10 Days.
There you go. She was in there with him, and this is a romantic comedy, and all I'm thinking is, her friend is the guy who raped Jack. Anyways, Jillian, who do you have at number three?
All righty then. My number three, when you heard these two words, "Hello, Barbara," you knew it. Oh my God, you knew it was time for you to exit stage left. That is James Steadbeck. He was a scary son of a bitch. I mean, anybody who can morph himself into some young buck and come back after Barbara years later when he kept dying.
No, the writing team who came up with that was the one for that. They scared the shit out of me that could pop in somebody's mind.
What the hell? You heard me tell Luke I was scared when he said Stavros. I'm like, you sure you don't mean the one who wrote the line for Stavros? Come on, I'm giving you out here.
James Steinbeck was scary for me pre-PPAC. Post-PPAC, not so much.
They told me to tell you they ain't gonna
print PPAC.
Same principle.
That's the wrong show, baby.
Did you say Mel?
That's the wrong show.
Look, on behalf of Ella Wheeler, all bad outside filming did not take place in PPAC.
It's just easier to blame it for her all.
No, it's not.
Dr. Gamble went with Another World, or As the World Turns, after Guiding Light.
Ellen is grabbing her package and being like, look at her, Luke. I didn't do that shit. You ain't gonna blame me for that bullshit.
No, well, that was all, you know, Ellen will get...
her mentor, her actor turned producer. You know what, see... Lord, I just said, after seeing all the ugliness and crazy on Twitter, that I was going to quit being ugly. So, kumbaya.
You go on mute. We can do it, Dan. Shoot.
Kumbaya moments only last 3 weeks.
Your kumbaya moments don't even last 3 weeks. You're lucky if they last 3 days.
But yeah, James, I mean, he was so in love with Barbara that he wanted to have her run over by a bull inside of a ring. James was a scary mofo. When you hear those words, "Hello, Barbara," and "Ciao," did y'all see that episode when he came back and when he found out that Barbara was shacking up with John Dixon? I thought he was going to blow a gasket when he sent those those bitches off to that spa, and they became old.
Oh, yeah, that was bad. But I also thought that when he was manipulating Rosanna Cabot, there were some scenes in there where he's pretty badass. Mel?
Great minds think alike. By number three is James. Hello, Barbara Stenbeck. I mean, come on. How can you not be terrified of that? Just what Anthony Herrera was able to do with two words, his framing, his phrasing, his everything, just, it gets me every time. I mean, for all the reasons Jillian stated, there's no reason to go over it twice. James Stenbeck.
Jamie?
My number three, I guess, would be considered the Bay City, Illinois contemporary of James Stenbeck, and that is Carl to the Hutchins. Because for those of you who started watching Another World later in the game, like Luke, and only think of Carl as Rachel's poetry spouting, ponytail wearing boyfriend, y'all need to go back in the gap and see where Carl Hutchins was the scariest mofo to ever descend upon Bay City. He had an axe to grind with Mac. He believed Mac had done his family dirty, which years later we found out he didn't, which that kind of led to his redemption. But when he did think that they had done him dirty, he was no joke. He stalked Amanda. He tried to kill Mac and Rachel on numerous occasions. And when he showed up back in town, it was a scary time. Like, look, Kathleen McKinnon had to fake her death to get away from Carl Hutchins. He did not play. And then, you know, I don't know what. Look, I left her off this list, but Rachel Corey must have had some napalm in her nanny, because when he got a hold of that, he started taking her to New York. And well, now he hadn't gotten it when he took her to New York.
No.
He was reciting poetry and sonnets and hello and quoting Walt Whitman but he used to be crazy.
God, I wanted to stab myself seeing these.
I'm kids. Like, Rachel had that. Look, Rachel had that. She put that alligator on him. It was like, whoa.
Oh, those AARP members just acting a plum donkey.
That was a sexy storyline, and I'm going to tell you how I knew, because my grandmother was in that demographic, and she was every day, what's going on with Carl and Rachel? And I'm like, Mom, you're getting a little too hot behind that story now. You looking for your Carl?
He must have had something down there, too, because one minute she sounded like she was fresh off the boat from Chi-Town, and then the next minute, hey, Carl, I'm like, yes.
Vicky Whitcomb did notoriously pick up Charles Keating's accent when they started working together. She told me to tell y'all, though, if it worked, Madonna, why couldn't she do it?
Well, hey, Madonna said she stole a page from that bitch's book and did it years later.
Rachel came from the wrong side. Look, Rachel came from the wrong side of the tracks. But when she started messing with Carl, she was talking like a proper British. Look, she could be on Downton Abbey.
I'm serious. Can you imagine if she was on Y&R? If she was paired up with Eric Braden? I'm like, good Lord.
Inaudibly.
Oh, God.
I have a tie at number three.
Of course
We make the rules up as we go along. Go on.
Log.
Kate Collins as Janet from Another Planet on All My Children, and Robin Madsen as Heather Weber on General Hospital.
Okay, well, at least it's the same. Well, partially the same. Well, she shared the role of Janet with
Janet from Another Planet. Absolutely loved and adored her, but she could scare the crap out of me. And the reason why I picked Kate Collins is, for me, having watched them both, I always enjoyed Kate Collins because it was a little bit more comedic. But when she went psycho, she was scarier for me than Robin Madsen. However, Robin Madsen in Heather is just plain loony loopy. And I never know what to expect next from her, and she scares the crap out of me. If I was Stephen Lars, I would be locking her up, throwing away the key, and sending it down a drain.
He's too busy trying to strum a guitar somewhere.
I want Heather to kill off Stephen Lars. Get him!
Birds never laughed before. He's somewhere singing them David Jones songs at a nightclub.
Girl.
A magic dragon or something.
Sing it, man. What are you singing?
Girl.
Oh, stupid.
We're alone now. Look, trying to send Debbie Gibson songs to a country twang. It doesn't seem to be anyone around.
Olivia wasn't high on PCP. She was just high because she just couldn't take that.
Look, Olivia is acting. Ain't nothing wrong with her. She tried to get back with Sonny. Every time Stephen Lawrence come near her, I saw a vision. I saw a spider.
Lisa LoCicero does not deserve to be stuck with that character.
I used to call Nicholas Prince Nickelbore. Now it's Dr. Boredom.
Jillian, number two.
Number two is the man. One of my favorite son of a bitches. Oh, hear me saying son of a bitches like Luke. Sons of bitches. And that is Todd Manning. Before he became a little doopy doopy, Todd was a bad mofo. I mean, after he did his shenanigans with Marty? No, before he plotted. People don't realize where all this stemmed from. Todd and Marty used to be little, you know, booty call buddies. And he just, you know, Marty was.
Oh, I didn't know that. So they hooked up.
They hooked up before. And Todd clowned the daylights out of because, you know, Marty was the tragic hero, was the tragic bitch who's. Parents died, left all this money, and a drunk Aunt Kiki was just blowing through her money. Todd and Marty hooked up before, and she was all, stay with me, Todd. And Todd was like, bitch, please, ain't nobody finna stay with you. And she was tutoring him. So when he failed the test, he thought Marty did that on purpose because he got suspended from the football team.
Ooh, you're making me go back and watch that story. Is it on YouTube?
Should be on YouTube. He thought that Marty set him up because of that, and he was like, oh, hell no. So him and his frat buddies, you know, pulled that train on Marty, and then, you know.
No, they gang raped. A train is consensual.
Oh, Lord, Jillian.
They did. Anyway.
You let the train get ran on them. They are participants. They gang back.
Anyways, tomato, tomato, whatever. You know, and then he went out. Oh, Todd had some mommy issues because he went after Nora, although she wasn't old back then, but still, he tried to rape Nora. Then Todd just became batshit crazy. He blew up Ian Armitage's daddy. He think he killed Suede Pruitt by accident, too.
I remember him from the magazines. I remember that was like, wasn't that like a really good-looking dude playing that character?
No, he wasn't.
Mm-mm. Are you sure?
He was cute.
Who am I thinking about?
Probably thinking about Luna's brother.
What was his name? It was some dark-haired boy.
Dylan, I think. No, was his name Dylan? I think his name was Dylan. I think you're thinking about Luna's brother, Dylan. He was cute. Sway, child, please. When he died, I didn't give a fee-fi-fo, you know what. I mean.
This boy I'm thinking about had long, dark hair.
That was Dylan. That was Dylan Moody.
Okay. And then he went on to Y&R and played, like, didn't he mess with Phyllis on there?
Oh, I don't know if he messed with Phyllis, but he went on to Passions.
Yes, that's him. That's him. Yeah,
that was Dylan Moody. I wasn't no Suede Pritchett. I blew it. No Suede Pruitt. It's ugly self. Sorry, but you were not fine. I thought Marty was crazy.
End of the show.
Yeah, she pretty much proved it, nasty alpha. But Todd was the man. Todd was the ultimate man. I mean, you know, years he kept trying to make it up to Marty, and then all that shit flew out the window when he saw Blair on the floor like a dog screwing Patrick Thornhard. Todd was like, oh, hell no. I got shot in the back for your bitch ass, and you on here screwing Blair like a dog? And that's when Todd 2.0 was like, look, I'm gonna get y'all, all of y'all back. I mean, anybody who can have you held hostage in a room with fake dynamite to prove that he didn't kill anybody, that's a bad mofo. You don't mess around with Todd Manning. Asa was having a heart attack, and Todd was like, no, I'm not letting his old ass go nowhere. Good, he should die. Oh, I miss those days, damn it.
Mel?
My number two is seeing the sight of Ellen Wheeler with a handicam. Every time I see that, I get the shivers and I get flashbacks of
the vapors.
Kim, of Kim Zimmer sweating her balls off and be back. And
Marge Dussay popping out of a bush.
Alexandra Spalding having to pop out of a bush and all kinds of things. And Harley's running around her house paying bills. And I don't know what happened.
A house that never got built. It never got built. Did it ever get built before the end of the show?
Never, ever, Jamie. Never.
Oh, Lord.
It makes me not be able to go on. I can't do it. Take it away, please.
That was, you know what, on the real, Mel, that was thing, since we've been doing this podcast, that was the scariest thing we ever watched happen to daytime television.
It was like daytime got raped and pillaged and raped and pillaged some more. It was like they got raped four times.
Then they stuck it on TV. I don't,
yeah.
What's happening? Yeah. That's my number two. Ellen with and a handy cam.
Jamie?
My number two is a character so scary that Bill Bell broke his rule of having to have a villain have eternal punishment. You know, David Kimball, as we mentioned, ended up having to be killed in a garbage, a trash compactor. But Sheila Carter survived to fight another day because she was just that badass. I remember those promos they used to do with that dude who they used to do these radio spots with the Clarence dude, and this music would be playing and you'd hear, "Nurse Sheila is coming after you." Nurse Sheila.
Clarence was kind of scary too.
Oh, Sheila was terrified. You know, y'all know the story. Lauren Fidmore's husband, Dr. Scotty Granger, got messed up with this nurse at the hospital. And next thing you know, forget Melanie and Scarlett. Lauren had a helper on her like white on rice. She was snatching up babies, gave Lauren some old defective baby, and kept Lauren's child. Was so crazy that she had the baby's birthmark removed to make sure that Lauren never figured out that Scotty was her child. I mean, was a mess on two shows. After she tried to burn up her mama and Lauren in a house on The Young and the Restless, she went to The Bold and the Beautiful and began terrorizing the Forresters for years. You know, Brooke was her girl, which is, you know, so funny, you know, that of all the people in town, Brooke became her girl because Sheila became the nanny. She was the nurse for Forrester Creations, and she also became the nanny for little Eric, or at the time, you know, now we call him Rick. But wormed her way into that family and into Eric's bed. Then, in a brilliant Bill Bell twist, we learned that was so organic and realistic, unlike these twists when they happen today, we learned that, what do you know, Lauren Fidmore knew the Forresters. It made perfect sense. Her family's in department stores. Their family's in fashion. So Lauren is like, that's that bitch Sheila who tried to kill me, you know. But Scott on his deathbed begged her to let, which I was like, Scott, really? Really, you know, I'm sorry, I know you dying, but you begging Lauren to let Sheila, you know, live to terrorize other people because you think she's changed. So, you know, Lauren didn't keep silent for long, but there was this one fight. There were several fights on Bold and Beautiful with them, but one was a dream sequence. And Lord, Sheila just scared the shit out of you no matter what she did. Coming at you with a fireplace poker, she sick some bees on Mike. Wait a minute. Who did she sick the bees on? Somebody was allergic to bees, and so she put bees in their vent. I mean, Sheila did not play. Sheila Carter, if you take away, basically take away anything post her becoming a militia leader on Bold and the Beautiful, and take away everything they've done with her on The Young and the Restless that wasn't written by Bill Bell, she is hands down, in my opinion, the best villain ever in daytime. If you do, like I said, if you do away with everything post them going crazy, Sheila was, you know, because I mean, it was so timely. The movies that were out around that time were like The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, and you know, those kind of movies. single white female. I mean, and she was that. She was, and it was a realistic terror. That's what I loved about it. You know, yeah, we've got our Stefanos and, you know, people like that, and Mikos Cassidy tried to, but Sheila was something that could happen to anybody. A coworker of your husband going so crazy over his dick that she decides to destroy your life. Remember that astronaut woman who drove off? Yeah, I mean, this happens in real life, which that's why, to me, that's why it was scarier than most of the soap villains. Sheila Carter.
Coming in at number two for me is a General Hospital character portrayed by an actor who has not just scared me on one show, but two. Manny Ruiz, portrayed by, and forgive me if I mispronounce this, Robert Lissardo.
That's how you pronounce it.
Scared the crap out of me on General Hospital, and it didn't help that I had watched him in a story arc on Nip Tuck, where he was playing a villain there as well, and he had scared the crap out of me at Nip Tuck, and then he showed up in Port Charles, and his Manny went and terrorized Sam, and it's one of the few times that I've ever actually felt sorry for Sam. But Lissardo is such a good actor at
That was Sam's greatest love affair. What you
Shut up.
The only man who was just like her. They were two peas in a pod.
No, they
you know,
weren't.
And the thing is when people say, oh, yeah, we'd like these various villains to come back to General Hospital, he scared me enough that it's sort of like me watching The Walking Dead, where I sort of watch with one eye closed and one eye open because I don't want to be too scared, but I still sort of want to watch. He was the same way for me on General Hospital. Scared the crap out of me.
I'm so warped. I really wanted them to fall in love. They had this
they
sexual...
Brought him back.
They
had
did leave
sexual...
that thread way for him to come back, though.
Yeah, they had this sexual chemistry that was oddly inappropriate. And like,
who better to come back now that Sam doesn't have Jason? And
Chad, we got enough supervillains.
No, what I'm just saying is, you have Michael Easton's character John McBain, and he's a dutiful cop. This guy coming back could scare Sam now that she's having to protect a child, and we could see where it goes. I would much rather be watching him than Duke.
Now you stop that! You stop that right now!
At least one of their face moves. Mel, number one.
Shut up, you. That's so mean. And it's my turn.
It is Jillian's turn.
Mel and Jillian sounds alike, but my number one. My number one is the baddest son of a bitch in the land. Sorry, Carl. Sorry, the mood who ran through the water park. Ellen Wheeler, you got a reprieve. And please. Stavros Cassidine, who, what? That's a joke. Was Roger to the Thorpe. That man scared the bejesus out of me, and yet I still rooted for him. I just thought he was misunderstood because I just didn't want him coming after me. Roger Thorpe was the baddest man in the land, honey. Anyone who could go after Holly with guns blazing like that? And to all in the name for his Christina. I loved it when he would call Blake Chrissy or Christina. Ah! Oh, God. I was so sad when they got rid of him. And that Mickey, what's her name?
Mickey Dwyer Dobbins.
That thing when she was like, we don't want to see people wheezing. I was like, you speak for yourself, Cal. I did not appreciate that at all. Because he still had mojo left. Heifer. Oh, my God. Roger Thorpe was the baddest mother sucker in the land. Ed Bauer thinking he could go up against Roger was a damn joke to me. I'm like, Ed, go sit down and go cut out some baby or something. Go patch somebody up. I'm like, Roger! Roger, don't play! I'm like, go patch somebody up. Shut up. You need to have a stadium full of seats if you think you can get Roger Thorpe.
I know I love him. Roger never scared me. Roger did caused other sensation.
We don't want to know.
No, Roger scared me because how intense he was. How intense that he just felt for Holly, doing all that shit for Holly.
You remember when he made love after he saved her in that, you know, it was the same jungle where he had kidnapped her 2 years ago. That time he saved her from the bad guy, and he was like, Holly, it feels like the end of the world. And boy, look, Maureen Garrett told me to tell you she a good actress because she just revealed she's a lesbian, but I thought she was all day in a row. The way she, like, she tore Roger's clothes off. Boy, they tore it up. They named it that day.
And remember, was it Soap Opera Weekly that had that big picture of them? And it was really. Oh, God, those were the days. Roger's love and intensity for Holly scared the daylights out of me. I'm like, God damn. I'm like, that's how you feel when you love someone? I'm like, I would hate to see when you met, well, saw what happened when Roger was mad at you. Shit.
Adamala, what happens? He tried to make you go crazy so he can get his hands on your money.
I'm serious. Oh, my God. Loved him to bits. Rest in peace, Michael Zaslow. That was my number one, y'all.
Mel?
My number one has already been mentioned, but she has to be mentioned again because that's how terrifying she is. Sheila Carter from The Young and the Restless. I remember being a little girl and watching this storyline and being terrified of Sheila, just the way she would look at the screen and she'd try to tilt her head down a little bit and then crack that devious smile. Oh my God.
And the music. Whoever used to be the music supervisor at Y&R knew how to pick the perfect music for the perfect character. Because when Sheila would get to doing her villainy, it would be like, you'd be like,
she coming with she. Oh my God, it was terrifying. I mean, come on, y'all. Sheila.
Now the beautiful's like.
No, now it's a pussy, pussy, pussy.
Yeah. I wish it was that, but now we getting ding. Young people like this. Oh, what you here?
We bring back the sexy sex. The sexy sex. Oh, you know, somebody was always getting it on. You heard that sex come on.
Oh, yeah. Especially.
Oh, God.
Oh, God. Yes, Sheila even had her own, kidnapped her own mother because she was going to rat on her. Anybody that will be willing to do anything to their own mother is absolutely terrifying to me.
Like, bitch, you gonna tell that ain't my baby, are you? Uh-huh, we gonna see, because I'm finna tie you in here to this chair and set you on fire.
God, Sheila wasn't that nice. Oh my God. Terrifying. I can't even. Just thinking about it. Ugh, I get uncomfortable. So, Sheila Carter, number one.
Jamie?
My number one, it was so scary that I almost couldn't finish watching the story. And it was Brent and Marion on Godlight. Brent Lawrence started off as a nice little, you know, executive at Spalding until he started, like, doing stuff like raping Lucy and making her believe that she had HIV and...
Oh, damn.
Oh, yeah, just crazy stuff. He kidnapped Tangie, who was played by my Marcy Walker, which she needed to be kidnapped because she never should have been on that show. You know, he was a mess. I mean, and then... as if he wasn't as a mess enough in his own persona, he started wearing women's clothes and going around calling himself Marion Crane. And killed my Nadine! It's killed Paul Dini! Oh, Lord! Another soap psychic who couldn't see that she was about to die! Nadine Cooper!
Just doomed, darling!
You almost have to wonder how Celeste has survived all these years.
The only soap psychic who know her game is, well, Olivia be telling folks too. They don't listen to Olivia on General Hospital, but Celeste is like, it's doomed, darling, and then she get out of town. You know, Frankie and Nadine, they see the doom and then they want to go solve the case. Oh, okay. But
sometimes it's better to cut and run.
Celeste is like, feet don't fail now. But
Celeste is pretty much like, I told you bitches that I'm out.
Yeah, don't nobody believe her for much. She's like, it's a devil in Marlena. Shut up, Celeste. Okay. When she have your ass with pentagrams, you gonna think I did you wrong. But yeah, Marion Crane, Brent Lawrence, whatever he was calling himself, was the craziest, most disturbing thing I had ever seen in soaps. And it was so disturbing that the actor, Frank Beatty, allegedly it kind of messed him up in the head a little bit. He had to seek treatment. I think he gave an interview that, you know, he kind of, you know, playing that part kind of did him a little loop-de-loop, you know, so.
Really?
Yeah, allegedly. That's what I read. That, you know, that he had to, like, distance himself from that part because.
Sort of like Roger Howard, for how, you know, chicks would walk up to him and be like, rape me, Todd. He was like, what the hell?
I remember, you know what, I remember that, and I remember girls at my high school saying that. I also remember them saying that when, you remember when Tupac was alleged, and I was like, boy, y'all some simple, silly bitch.
Yeah.
You're saying you want somebody, it's like rape is not like it is on TV. I'm like, you don't want anybody to rape you, but yeah, I remember girls saying that stuff about Tupac. He wouldn't have had to rape me. I'm like, I don't think that's how rape goes. It's not, you know, it's not like it, the Harlequin, but
I'm
yeah.
I'm serious.
Brett Marion was a monster, and there was no, you know, there was no redemption for him. I mean, like a lot of soap villains, he was just rotten to the core.
Well, coming in at number one for me is someone already mentioned by Jamie. Going back to Another World, Carl Hutchins. I did not have as long of a history with the character as Jamie did, but I always remember being so mad that Rachel was with him. And I, even to the end, even when they were walking up the stairs together to take care of the twins, I kept thinking in the back of my mind, he's going to do something to her. And it's just, the whole thing, what he did with manipulating of the children and the fact that they were pushing back against him in the end storylines, everything about that character, I would have loved for him, Charles Keating, to come on General Hospital as Nikos Cassadine. It would have been fantastic, but it left a delible impression on me from the character, and it's always, even though I thought he was scary, he was always one of my favorite villains from that show.
I am revoking your casting privileges. I do not want no Mikos Cassadine popping up there. It was bad enough that Megan McTavish ran amok having Stavros frozen in GH's sub basement and him dying in a bottomless pit.
I wanted Eric Braeden. When Eric Braeden was first going through his contract negotiations, I would have snatched him up as Mikos. He would have, could you see that damn set? I would fly. I would sneak on the set. Look, Laura would just have to be mad on me. I would dress up in all black, get a grappling hook, and, you know, I would get on that set that day to see Eric Braeden and Maurice Bernard. Eric and Maurice, child of mine.
Steve Burton, too. Now, I ain't gonna lie. Now, I don't want Mikos to come, but just to have Eric on set with them mugs?
On that show? Because, you know, the GH set can be just about as cray-cray as Wyatt R. You know, let's back it up. When Steve was there, Steve Burton, Maurice, and Tony the other day, Eric Braeden walks on set. Yeah, honey, I would pay admission. They could charge. Look, I would pay more than I would pay to see T.I. Go see that.
What do you mean, Sonny wins? Yeah. Mikos wins. You know,
I have it in my contract. I always win.
Boy, it would be, look, they'd end up having to just whip them out. They just had to whip their dicks out on the set.
Oh, Lord. It would be, that would be.
How dare you, Spinelli? Measure this. Come here. Right now.
I'm forgetting Tony Gear ain't no punk either. I mean, the man stand up at the Emmys and pretty much told ABC, not pretty much, he did. He told ABC to suck it. So Eric coming on that set.
Well, Tony would be like, look, y'all handle this. I'm going on my 12-week vacation. Y'all find out amongst yourselves.
I'm saying, because if he was playing Mikos, you know they're going to have to put Luke in that orbit. So come on now.
Mikos, that would have been fire. He would have been fire as Mikos.
No, don't put
If they ever fire him, if they ever let him go, General Hospital's still on the air, that would be a casting.
They don't fire him, but if they keep, you know what, I can tell you, picture it. Entertainment Weekly. March 2013.
Jill Abbott casting?
No, if by March Victor is still running around telling everybody me and Nikki finna plan a party at the penthouse, and I don't care nothing about Newman Enterprises. Honey child, almighty powers of Grayskull, it's going to be some interviews. And he is going, because he ain't gonna stand for that too long. I'm going to tell you right now. He ain't going to stand for it. He going to act a fool. It's going to be like when Kim Zimmer was like, I don't know who they hate more, me or River Shane up in hell. It's going to be like when Erica Slazak was like, Dina Higley can't write to save her motherfucking life. I had to fix it up to put it in her voice. Dina Higley cannot write to save her motherfucking life. Really?
You don't sound like Erica with that laugh. You know who you sound like with that laugh. You know damn well who you sound like. I ain't gonna out them. You fool.
Do it, Jillian. Do it.
Uh-uh. I'm gonna do it after the podcast. You're you dead wrong, Jamie Gittins. Dead ass wrong. Why are you dead wrong?
Bitch, you couldn't write your name if I put some scrap sheets of paper in front of you. No!
You need to stop.
Oh, but it would be, I mean, hey, if Eric Braden showed up on General Hospital, that would be a coup.
Them chicks ain't gonna put up with that. You know who will act.
Oh, no, I'm gonna tell you how it will go. They're like, you know, Nancy LeGrand is your daughter.
Whose daughter? What are you talking about? No.
Well, at least he'd have a talented actress as a daughter.
But you keep me looking at Kristen Alderson. Are you my new love interest?
Oh.
And I have some chemistry. I'm going to pitch a story where you become my... She's like, I want my Bobby.
You know Nancy LeGrand will not put up with that on there. She will spill that tea on that Twitter.
It'll be all on the Twitter, you know, because by the end of the election, it'll be over.
Nancy people will be like, this motherfucking
election will be over, and Dancing with the Stars will be off. So, yeah, she'll be on there talking about, I don't know who Eric Braden Dickey is. I took down Mitt Romney, and I'll take him down, too.
You, who you going to have that bitch? You know, man.
And Maurice will be like, look at her.
Well, I suppose it would provide Jeannie Francis her opportunity to come back as
someone with an agenda.
Exactly.
And a little bit of an agenda. It's Laura, girl! You don't supposed to have no agenda! You were supposed to run around and hug Lulu and save the world with big diamonds called the Princess Diamond and her boo-boos. You are not supposed to have an agenda. You are Laura.
Now, she has an agenda that you, your ass on the unemployment line, sucker.
She don't have to wear the boo-boos no more because she lost all that weight. And look, girl, I feel you because it's hard to lose weight. I've been doing it myself. But, you know, come back and just be a cute Laura. What you mean? I want an agenda. Like, she want Laura to come back and take control of ELQ or something. Girl, that ain't that character.
You tell me to tell you, bitch, not ever. Will you
be like, that not that character. I'm like, that ain't what I. Laura's only agenda when I was watching that show was snarking at Bobby. I'm trying to act like who was the better mama. Because remember, with one of my favorite scenes, because it was so realistic. You know, I love the realistic stuff and I love the crazy. It just depends. But when Lucky was acting all crazy in Bobby's house, all up under the table.
I miss the brownstone.
You know, he was showing his little ass out. And if that didn't remind me of my family, because you know, when company comes. And they let their kids do stuff that your mama don't let y'all do. And your mama be like, y'all gonna have to do something with that little bastard because he is on the floor with my pots and pans on his head. What is wrong with him? Do he need to go to the doctor? Lucky was doing something up under that table and just acting crazy. And Bobby was like, I don't let my kids just act crazy. And Laura was like, well, we raised Lucky to be a free spirit. And Bobby was like, up in this brownstone ain't no free spirits. Get that little boy up and make him sit down at the damn table. You know, y'all raising him like a monkey. And then Luke came in there and was like, Bobby, don't be dogging Laura because we raised Lucky the way we want to. And Bobby was like, And that's why he bad and going to grow up and be on some crack. You know, yeah, my boy going to be gay, but he going to be a good gay boy that don't never come home to see his mama, but he going to be a good gay boy. We don't know how BJ going to be because she finna go get hit by the bus. But
oh, that was so wrong.
And my daughter, well, I didn't raise her, the oldest girl. So she gonna be a mess.
Steal my husband with her funky ass.
Bobby was basically like, Laura, you don't know how to raise your kid. And I was like, if that ain't some stuff that you see in a real family.
Oh my God. Good old Jess. Stop it, Jess. That was
Sarah Labine. Where have all the cowboys gone? All the good ones done left, pretty much. Well, I think Ronnie's a good one. I do. He's happy, but he's good. But we don't have no Claire Labines and Bill Bells no more.
Good writer, but let me catch a Cassadine back on that as Dad Ron.
Go. I'm telling you, Eric.
No, I wouldn't mind Stefan back.
I'm going to tell y'all, Lukey, but your girl better not. Look, Constance Towers better not ever even get a hangnail because I do a wish for Canston. Victoria Windham!
Team up and take that down.
Hey, I'm a big enough fan of Victoria Windham. I would not mind. If it was something that Constance Towers was unable to do it for some other reason, I would not have a problem with Victoria Windham coming on as Helena.
All I would need is for Luke to be like, look, I've paid this debt to your family. No, you have not! Take it to the streets.
And if she doesn't, she might chuck one of Tony Geary's Emmys at him.
No, I'm like, don't send no production person to ask her nothing because she will pick up a prop and sling it at your head.
Victoria Windham sound hood when she picked up somebody. She sound gangster. She really do. She, you know, people used to people throwing water at you, throwing your food and shit. Bitch picked up an Emmy and was about to clock you in your head with it. That's hood.
And then, look, I'm not going to name no names, but a friend of mine who does another podcast said that they tried to get her to do an interview, and she hung up the phone in their face. She said, "They tried to get no soap."
Call her about that foolishness.
She said, "I ain't doing love letters. Shut the fuck up. Don't call me no more about that. I done talked to you about
it on my phone." Oh God, I'm about to wet myself. You're such an asshole.
Vicky Windham is my girl. All the stuff that people would tell me thinking it would change my perception of her, all that did is make me go, okay, I see why I like her so much, because I'm pretty crazy myself, so, well, hell, we would have got along real good, because look, I know I love to chuck stuff.
She sound like she got a little black in her throwing shit. Well, you know she is fetish.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
They can be just as fiery.
On that note, we would encourage you to comment on this episode at daytimeconfidential.com. Add us as a friend on Facebook and follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/DCConfidential. Until next time, have a happy Halloween and so long.
No, I am not!
Laura has an agenda. No, she does not, Doc.
Yes, that's what she would tell her. No, she does not. And sit down and talk to Lulu. Look, them clothes be flowing like Dorothy's a Bornak. I miss you, Dickie Window. Oh,